So we need to be mindful of while we seek work that matters. And allow our work to become our identity. And we need to be mindful also for all those whose work does not provide meaning and who search for meaningful work. But to avoid conflating all these things, we need to remember that this is something deeper, vocation, calling. How we utilize our gifts for the common good, sometimes at home, sometimes in our neighborhoods, sometimes in our communities, sometimes at church. And the Hans says it this way: there is that for which we are paid, and there is that for which we are made. For each and all of us. And I wonder what that means in each of our journeys. More precisely, she asks, what does it mean for those of us who have followed a particular call into a particular kind of work for which we are paid? Are we in fact made for some aspect of this or all aspects of this? Or is there something outside of this which holds an even deeper, truer call? I often think of those earliest followers of Jesus. Who were they? What were their lives like? Their families, their work? How on earth did they make ends meet in the fishing business? What was their faith like? And to be a little cheeky, what bands did they like? Were they chocolate or vanilla? Did they cheer for the 49ers? Chiefs. It'd be a little profound. What were they looking for? How were they living their one wild and precious life? How were they living it when Jesus saw them, when Jesus found them, when Jesus beckoned them? In a very strange way, we would not be here if not for them, if not for that first generation, and then every generation that followed, followers who responded in some way when Jesus saw them, just like there will not be a church going forward if not for our generation. But here they were fishing. Jesus said to them, simply, follow me. And so here we are. Scrolling through our phones, watching the game, doing the dishes, walking the dog. And Jesus says, follow me. It's rather extraordinary. The interviews I had with your PNC less than a year ago now were the latest versions of many interviews I remember. Some went well, some not so much. My first interview to get a job at McDonald's. Then there were other jobs where I tried to convince, sometimes successfully, other times not so much, that I was the right guy for the job. There were other times when I was less enthusiastic and had to pretend that I was. I also remember being on the other side of the table. Perhaps you've been there as well, asking questions to a candidate. Trying to discern if this one is the right one. Reading resumes, checking references. There is none of that here. None of it. Jesus sees the two brothers, and he simply calls them, follow me. He conducts no interviews, he asks for no references, there is no probationary period. You don't need to complete a FAFSA form. He doesn't ask what party they're a member of. He doesn't care about who they love. He doesn't check their stock portfolio and inquire about their GPA. If they have a pre-existing condition, he sees them and he says, follow me. And they do. He saw something in them. he calls people to. Certainly, there is work to be done, tasks to complete, places to go, people to see. But the primary sense of calling, where Jesus invites us to follow, is in relationship. Relationship with him, relationship with each other and all of us together, and relationship with the world all around us. David Lowe invites us to reimagine just what it is that Jesus is calling these first disciples to be and to do, fishers of people, and that implies relationships, Lowe says. Jesus calls these first disciples in relationship with himself, with each other, and with all the various people they will meet over the next few years and indeed the rest of their lives. And then Lowe's writes this. Jesus issues the same call to us to be in genuine and real relationships with the people around us, and to be in those relationships the way Jesus was and is in relationship with his disciples and with us. Bearing each other's burdens, caring for each other and especially the vulnerable, holding on to each other through thick and thin, always with the hope and promise of God's abundant grace. Sometimes that call will take us far from home, and sometimes it will take shape in and among the persons right around us. Our sister Dylan Brewer puts it this way. Answering Jesus' call, we start to hear the world's cries. We are drawn into relationship as we find what we need to serve as Jesus' co-laborers in the world. It's not easy work. But it's the work we were born to do. It's a vocation where we will become more fully human and understand better what the divine is up to among us. This is inclusive, to be sure. Jesus sees us. Jesus invites us. But it's more than that. It is radically inclusive. To affirm that we are chosen, given gifts to follow, not because of our CV or degrees or credentials or poll numbers or skill set. We are invited to follow because Jesus saw something in them, because Jesus sees something in us that is beyond our own capacity, except our capacity to drop what is for what may be. Martin Luther King Jr. articulated it this way. Everybody can be great because anybody can serve. You don't have to have a college degree to serve. You don't have to make your subject and verb agree to serve. You only need a heart full of grace, a soul generated by love. What will that look like? But we know it will look like a lot of different things. Frederick Buechner's well-known adage is on point. The place where God calls you is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. Where is that place for you? Your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger. Pay attention. Listen deeply. And we are not always able to discern that for ourselves. Jesus helps us. When we can't see in ourselves the pathway to serve because we have been left out or rejected or cut or not invited, Jesus does that for us. When we can find no useful gifts within us, Jesus discovers them and uncovers them and invites us to use them. A moment or two, we'll